Afternoon, good morning, good evening, and good night. Just for the pedantics of my shoes, you're all about Windows Phone Insight Podcast, show number 87. Welcome, I'm Ewan Spence, joined as always by some of the most knowledgeable commentators, speakers, and analysts of the Windows Phone world that write for the All About site. We have Ray Blanford.
Hello, everybody, good to be here.
All powered up with your charts and your infograms and everything for start of the week in the Nokia results, which we shall be looking at shortly. Isn't that true, Rafe?
That's absolutely true.
Lovely. We also have Steve Litchfield, who's been busy listening to as many podcasts as possible through every single podcast application for Windows Phone 8. Is that fair, Steve?
Yes. I've been using it 55 hours per day, every day, doing this research. So I'm...
Now, the only way you could possibly be doing that is if you're travelling it close to the speed of light for the time dilation effect. But we will come to Steve breaking the laws of physics and getting 55 into 24 later on in the show. As always, your comments are welcome, allaboutwindowsphone.com. You can also find us out there on the social networks on Facebook and Twitter, all the usual places as well. And of course, with Mobile World Congress coming up, Rafe, I'm going to assume that you're going to be powering up for pictures and everything that will be popping up through there as you adventure through Barcelona this year.
Yes, I'll be there covering all the news that's coming out. We just had Nokia announce that they're doing a press conference there on Monday the 24th, 8:30. I guess it's open season on rumours now as to what's going to be announced, but I think all the smart money is on probably some more in the low end. There's been some leaks around the Nokia 630 and 635, including one of them being the first dual SIM Windows phone device, perhaps with a bigger screen. So not a direct descendant of the 620 or a replacement for that device, but more thinking maybe 4.5-5-inch screen with that kind of mid-tier pricing that made the 620 very popular last year. I think we'll also see something at the high end. The Verizon Lumia icon, which we've written about on the site, so it appeared on the Verizon website, so sort of been announced but not officially announced by Nokia or by Verizon, and that's in the kind of the 900 or the 920 930 series. That's the Verizon specific one, but I'm sure there'll be a global variant, and that being announced at MWC, and again maybe a 5-inch screen, probably the same specification as the 1520 otherwise, so with that 20 megapixel camera, Snapdragon 800 process, and quite a lot of extras there. So it'll be, if you like, the new flagship, and that one to me feels a little bit overdue. I imagine there'll also be some accessories announced, particularly with a Bluetooth Smart or Bluetooth Low Energy theme. And then, of course, there's been lots of rumours around the Nokia Normandy handset. Now, this is reportedly, allegedly, whatever word you want to use, based on Android. But it's very much going to be a forked version of Android. And it's going to be the replacement for sort of Asha, or rather next in the Asha evolution. That's Nokia's feature phone lineup. So think about it as a smartphone or a Nokia Android device. Might be a bit misleading. It's really going to be Asha on Android, in much of the same way that Asha currently runs on Series 40, and at one point was going to be on a Linux derivative called Meltemi. So that one's generating lots and lots of buzz on Twitter and elsewhere, but I think people might be sort of misinterpreting what happens there. But all of that should happen at MWC, and it's all going to happen underneath a tree on the Nokia stand.
Indeed. Now, it's fair to point, it's based on the Android, it's probably going to be based on the Android open source project, not Android with your open handset lines and Google stuff on there. Lots of complicated. But Rafe, I have a question. We're going to come on to the Nokia results right in a second, but it kind of ties into this. How did Nokia stop MWC being awake?
Yeah, it's a good question, because of course we're expecting the completion of the Microsoft acquisition of device and services to happen sometime in Q1. Now, there's an open debate as to whether that'll happen before MWC, which is the end of February. They've got all of March that they could potentially announce it in. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if it happens in March. That was always kind of the expectation, but there is still a chance it could happen before then. But of course, all the planning for the event would have happened beforehand, so it's not really like Microsoft will have much say in any of that. And you know, there's all kind of legal restrictions and stuff we've talked about before. For some people, I guess it will be a wait. There's no way avoiding that. But really, you know, it doesn't change anything in one sense. You know, all the planning's been done ahead of time. And actually, when it will start disappearing or changing, if you like, is when, you know, it's completed and there's been a year go by. But I suppose it is an end of an era, and there's no way of avoiding that. But I guess the direct way to avoid a wake is to announce interesting things and make people interested in how it continues under Microsoft's ownership.
Because they do have an interesting PR challenge here, because it is a major turning point in the company, and many people, especially in Europe, are going to see it as a negative. And when we look at, and let's come to them now, the Nokia results, especially in the Lumia sales, you know, you've got two strong points of thing is going away and thing is going away. That's a tough narrative for a PR team to counter.
It is, and it is important because that's the way that the company is perceived. And it's kind of the, if you like, the lens through which Nokia or Microsoft's new smartphone division will be seen in the next few months. And especially if you add in that kind of potential stuff around Android, it gets even more interesting, because I actually think it makes sense. It could be an on-ramp for Microsoft products. It would effectively be like Amazon's Kindle device, but running, you know, Microsoft services with an evolved version of the Azure OS. But it's a tough one to sell to the press. And coming on to that, you've also then got this end of Nokia as a, you know, smartphone manufacturer. I mean, from the Nokia point of view, they'll say, well, we've got a continuing business and there's lots going on with NSM, with here, with advanced technologies. But looking at the hardware business, yes, it is a challenge. And I think it's something that is particular to Western Europe and to a lesser extent the Asia Pacific markets. It might not be appreciated in the Americas that, you know, Nokia is a much loved brand, and, you know, it will have an effect when it becomes Microsoft. You know, it, how they choose to brand the phones, I mean, the likely story is it's, they're all going to become Lumia devices. They'll no longer be Nokia Lumia, they'll be Microsoft Lumia. Whether Microsoft brand gets on those phones, we don't know yet. We'll have to wait and see. But I think it's a kind of an open question. But at the same time, I think you can read too much into that. And it's easy to sort of get bound up in seeing this and sort of all big change and everything. And of course it is. But at the same time, it is the same design team, it's the same software development team, it's the same engineers, the same marketing people, the same comms people as there were before. You know, this is very much Microsoft is absorbing Nokia's device and service. It's not like a merger where sort of one company overwrites the other. Now, of course, it has a cultural change in the longer term, but, you know, it, aside from the issues of was it inevitable, which I think the results make clear that it had to happen. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, do you have a view on it, Ewan?
I think it's going to be tough. And also, we've talked before here on the podcast of the difference in culture, the shizu that you have that still permeates Nokia to a certain extent.
Cease. Sort of,
I was going to blame the MP3 compression artifacts on that one, okay? And then you have the go get them win! Ah, developers attitude that you did have at Redmond. It's going to be interesting to see what thing the new CEO does. And the worry for me is that you have Nokia splitting up and the PR teams in Nokia divvying up duties and something in Finland and something in Finland with Nokia, something in Finland with Microsoft, some moving over to Redmond, and not having clear direction. You then have Microsoft between CEOs, reorganizations going on there. Again, you know, still trying to work out their way with possibly a focus more on Build in April, their developer conference, and the mess they've made of Windows 8, partially saved by 8.1 going forward to Windows 9. There's a lot of gaps for a lot of things to fall through. And let's be honest here, the tech press don't have a natural let's be nice to Microsoft status. If there's something that they can hit them with, they will hit them with it. And then you have the tech press in Europe who goes, you took away our first love. And, you know, Steve will understand what I mean. Rafe, give it another 20 years, a bit melancholy, a couple more Richard Curtis videos and films in your life, and you'll understand what we mean by somebody's beating up your first love. So that would be tough to counter in the best of circumstances, and neither Nokia services and divisions or Microsoft are in the best positions at the moment. So now we've had a Rafe being the yay, me being the hold on a minute. Steve, war, famine, death or destruction? Take your pick on what's going to happen with this story.
The thing about these big shows, Mobile World Congress perhaps especially, is that you look at them to get a snapshot of a company in its prime, running at speed, releasing products, a roadmap, it's got a history, all of that. And that's the one thing that's not going to happen in this case with Microsoft and Nokia. They're clearly 100% slap bang in the middle of a huge, massive transition. And I think everyone, every single attendee at the conference will know that. I think that it's all very well to talk about how the PR people get the message out. It's not really about PR. Everyone knows that they're right in the middle of something huge and major. It's effectively, the history is history. The future is yet to be written. And right now, they're in the middle of who knows where. So I honestly think people will make allowances. I think that is not a cop-out. It's simply saying that people will understand. If things aren't necessarily clear-cut, they will understand. And as we'll be here, I guess, during 2014 to look at what comes out of it.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I don't know whether it will be that easy for them, because I think, as Ewan sort of hinted at there, sometimes the media isn't terribly kind. And, you know, Microsoft is facing its own set of issues with the new CEO, with the restructuring going on. And there is kind of this danger that the Nokia device and service division moves into a company. You know, previously it was kind of the raison d'etre of Nokia. You know, it's the thing that everyone recognised and talked about. It's going to be a smaller fish within the Microsoft pond. I mean, it's going to dominate the devices and consumer hardware division, and it is going to be a very big, obvious, open public thing, and that a lot of people are going to be watching it. But it is going to only be part of the Microsoft business, you know. So a lot depends on what happens with Microsoft. But I think, you know, Steve is right there about MWC. It is a transition event, and you know, looking ahead, we're going to have the Microsoft Build event in April and the reveal of Windows Phone 8.1 and, to a certain extent, Windows Phone Next stuff, as well as Windows Next stuff. And so that might be a chance to sort of change the conversation. So it is sort of going to be a hold on, wait and see what happens a little bit at MWC. But what they do need to do, and it's kind of the Nokia part of it and the hardware part of it, is provide some fresh hardware, provide a continuing story about the portfolio, because some of the older devices do feel a bit long in the tooth now. You know, it seems mad saying this, but the 520 and the 720 and the 620, all about a year old now, may be feeling a bit out of date. And if it wasn't for the 925, the 920 would certainly feel out of date. And even something like the 1020, there's comments now around, oh, I want it running on the new hardware platform, the Snapdragon 800. And so I think, you know, burnishing that portfolio will be really the thing to look for at MWC.
And there's also the issue then that you have, the MWC part of the story, but the story that we're dealing with now is the Nokia results. And you're saying that we have to wait till Build another 4 months? I mean, how many passes does Windows Phone get here, Rafe? Because they got a pass of, oh, here's Windows Phone 7, oh, wait till Windows Phone 8. Oh, then Windows Phone 8 was announced, and then they pretty much Osborne Windows Phone 7. And then Windows Phone 8 came out and said, give us 12 months, you have all the applications there. It's 12 months, I said, 8.1's coming, and we've got a new CEO. Now it's coming up for MWC. It's like, okay, hold on. No, April. It's going to be fine in April.
It's not so much really? Fine. Yeah, I do understand what you mean. I don't think it's going to be fine, but that's kind of the next chapter. And I think it's the nature of the tech industry, and mobile in particular, and some of the reporting that goes around, that you always end up looking forward to the next event. I mean, you can put a positive spin on things. We'll touch on the results in just a moment. But equally, the discussion around the bigger screen iPhones, that's something that's happening now, as well as the next version of Android, as well as what Samsung is doing with Android. Is it going to try and get independence from Google? You know, those are all, burning issues. Just as, you could talk about BlackBerry and them trying to sort of revive their business by switching back to enterprise and maybe doing a service play. And so you get all of that. I think Windows Phone, you talked in the previous week sort of about the 10% level and sort of trying to become that third player. And it's in that difficult place at the moment. You said it was in kind of the unhappy valley between two places. And that does, I think, have an impact on the way it's talked about all the time. But if you compare it to where it was a year ago, when it was just a few percent and it was going nowhere, it wasn't established as the third ecosystem, then things have improved, but it happens slowly. Things don't happen overnight. But when it gets talked about, and when analysts talk about it, it does always tend to be that forward-looking momentum, and the sense of inevitability about that. But maybe we could switch back slightly and look at just the Q4 results, because there were some interesting numbers there.
Yes, which numbers shall we start with? How about the bit of Nokia that's being left over? That's performing very well, isn't it? Can I be a cynic and just go, look, there are two bits of Nokia. There's the one that's making money and there's the one that isn't. And the one that isn't is being sold for money.
That's exactly how I pretty much put it in the story, in the last set of results. And it's just proved even more true. I mean, if you look at it, Nokia refers to it as sort of the discontinued business and the continuing business in the results release. And yes, NSN here, Advanced Technologies, they're all doing pretty well. I mean, they make money on its own, and quite substantial amounts of it. There's some questions around NSN, particularly maybe its margins are going to come down a bit this year. And it is the vast majority of the business. I mean, if you actually look at the sort of the two two parts, something like 90% of the revenue is coming from NSN. But then there's the bit which is advanced technology, which is essentially patents licensing, and that's doing quite well, and that's expected to grow this year. And so kind of the message is that Nokia will have a very sustainable business there, and its device and services have been hurting it in the last year, and plus it's obviously going to get paid a lot of money by Microsoft for that business. And so going forward, you know, plenty of investment opportunities. I think interest in it will inevitably die away when it's not producing hardware. You know, there's just something not quite as exciting about making the bits that go in cell base stations. And even the Maps doesn't get quite as much interest as elsewhere. I think that Maps is here, that is the one that's really worth watching, because there's an awful lot of potential. It's a growth business there. We're sort of thinking autonomous cars, maps and smartphones. Pretty much every device has a location element to some extent, and it's facing off against Google there, so it's not going to have an easy time of it, but worth watching. And of course, can they exploit the patent portfolio better in advanced technology and keep on researching new things? Certainly potential there. But looking at the device and service division, it's clear that it's kind of lost more money. So, for example, there's an operating loss of nearly 200 million euros in that last quarter of the year. It kind of makes it fairly obvious why the business had to be sold. Nokia wasn't making money from it. That prospect of that changing wasn't going to happen. They weren't getting to the sort of 15 to 20 million smartphone devices that they'd have needed to break even. And on top of that, the mobile phone business is suffering because more people are buying smartphones. And so the average selling price is coming down. The margins are getting thinner there. The mobile phone business is actually still relatively healthy. Nokia's making money on that part of the business. It's the smartphones that have been kind of the anchor, if you will. So that's kind of the, in pure financial terms. I guess come back to you on that, Ewan, and then we'll go on to just talk about the unit volumes, which is probably the thing that caused most comment.
Oh, I think the unit volume got it all round. Look, Nokia's shareholders should be very happy. If we go back 5 or 6 years and we look at the landscape that was out there, Motorola got bought out. You know, they were gone. Sony Ericsson kind of fractured. Sony took some bits, Ericsson took Netflix, and it done over. And a lot of the big names are in huge trouble. Palm, BlackBerry, okay, kind of. I'm not dead yet. Don't put me on the cart. When you think about those companies that were around at the start of the 21st century and where they are now, you know, if you discount new competitors like Apple, like Google, Nokia has actually come out on top. Okay, they didn't ride the wave, they didn't disrupt themselves, and, you know, there are business cases all down told. But at the end of the day, they've come through the first wave of smartphones, the sort of indies and small companies, before the American oligarchs came on board. They've survived, they've transitioned out, and they still have shareholder value, they still have income. It's not the same as it was in 1999, but they're still there and they're still swinging. And Nokia as a company have reinvented themselves. They went from tire company and welly boots and TVs and routers into smartphones, and now they're into networking equipment and research and geolocation stuff. So, as you know, if we were all about Nokia.com, which many people think we are, but we're not, you know, we were going, the company has survived, the company has had a rough period, maybe it should have jumped a year or two sooner to this sort of plan and not swung away with giving a final swing with Windows Phone, but I think emotionally they had to. So from that point of view, yay. From the point of our time as Symbian, it is, you know, things die and you mourn them and you grieve for them, and I'm just about at the fourth stage of that process now. For Windows Phone, I worry that Microsoft are not going to be able to iterate fast enough, that Windows Phone will be dug down inside Red and politics and be forced to follow another Piper's tune without an external influence such as Nokia driving the platform forward. There are many, many issues. this process, this of Microsoft buying Nokia's services and devices division, I think will slow Windows Phone down. And wow, it really needs slowing down at this moment in time, doesn't it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the obvious risk here. And I think it's an imponderable in that we can't really answer it at the moment. On the other hand, you know, you could say, will the benefits of having everything under one roof come into play? Possibly. It's a question that isn't just about smart devices, though, in my view, because there is a coming together of all the various platforms, and it's, you know, the idea of three screens and all of that is starting to become more important. I do wonder whether the timing of this might be just right. I mean, there is this suggestion or this idea, which I think is quite right, that Microsoft basically missed the wave on mobile, but it's not the first time it's happened to the company. And, you know, underestimating or underplaying what Microsoft can do, I think, is a mistake that a lot of people tend to make. You know, it's still with us and it's got plenty of money to play in the game. Quite what form that will take remains to be seen. And while it's, you know, you get some commentators saying, you know, they should give up on doing their own thing in mobile and they should just sell their services over the top of other platforms, and that'd be Android and everything else. And that discussion is going to keep on happening, but I think it's a mistake to kind of, it's very easy to be an armchair analyst and say, do that, do this, but turning those kind of multi-billion corporations is, you know, far from simple. And so it's a discussion and a debate that's going to keep on going. I mean, we're obviously going to keep on talking about it, but I think there's, not surprising, there does tend to be a certain amount of pessimism and gloom when something like this happens, but equally you can see the opportunities in it. And I think there may be a lot of people who end up surprised by what happens. And I don't think there's an automatic assumption there will be a slowdown. I think there may be initially people will look for it. And if they look for it, they'll probably find it. But it's a question we'll have to look at in a couple of years' time. And I think Microsoft is well aware of the need to speed things up. And, you know, Nokia changed itself an almost unbelievable amount in the last couple of years in terms of the speed with which it was producing devices and releasing software updates and doing interesting things and innovating. And, you know, it's really got a reputation for that now. Some of the hardware it's released have been really first class, and it, you know, everyone's going, oh, it's Microsoft that's holding Nokia back. But what's to say that Nokia culture can't sort of be taken into Microsoft and have a positive impact and everything gets sped up?
Danger?
Indeed. There's plenty of examples that both way, but that's the point. It's kind of uncertain because you can find evidence both ways.
Find me one company that Microsoft's absorbed that's done better after Microsoft bought it.
You could look at something like the Skype acquisition, which has been pretty successful.
Yeah, okay.
And you know, you can go further back in time and find other ones as well. Of course, it's a danger. I mean, let's just get back to the results, because I do think it's worth talking about the volumes of Lumia units. Basically, there was a bit of discussion because Nokia didn't actually put them in the press release, but they did later confirm that there were 8.2 million now. The point about that is it's down sequentially because it was 8.8 million the previous quarter.
They said 8.2 million Lumia devices, so there's not sort of wiggle room with some strange Asha device in there either, is there?
No, I mean, you could wiggle room with a 2520, but that's probably, you know, 100,000 units at
most. So 8.2 million and 7.
Well, that's maybe a little unkind to the 2520. But the other way of looking, of course, that they've more than doubled the sales year on year. I mean, I think the disappointment was here because people expect the holiday season, this last quarter of the year, to be substantially higher than the previous quarter of the year. And that is actually the usual pattern. And this definitely does raise concerns about why this has happened and why has it gone down. And Microsoft will have to answer, you know, I guess it'll be Microsoft going forward, answer questions about the trajectory of Lumia sales. I think it's easy to be just entirely doom and gloom about this, but you know, if you look at the product roadmap in terms of what got released, we're talking about the 1520 and the 625 for the most part, and some of the old devices are actually feeling a bit longer too. We do have the 1020 to be fair as well, but that is kind of a niche device. And so I suspect this is, as much as anything, the result of a bit of stagnation of sales, but also sell-in decline and things like that. You can look at other reasons. I mean, I've seen some people suggesting it's because uncertainty around the Nokia Microsoft acquisition. Yeah, that's perfectly possible. In all honesty, it was below what I was expecting. I thought would be doing 9 or 10 million, talking about that kind of number. It will really be interesting to see what happens in the first 6 months of 2014, because that's going to be the really, really telling thing. But it plays into what we were saying earlier. Once there's sort of this uncertainty, anything that can be read as negative news, you know, it comes as a poor result or shocking result. Don't get me wrong, 8.2 million isn't a good result, but I think you have to put some context in it and sort of say it's not catastrophic. It doesn't really change the context of the conversation. And actually, it sort of tells you exactly why Nokia decided to sell device and services. I mean, my own personal view on it, a combination of that selling thing, but also the low-end device is doing better than anyone really expected in the sort of third quarter of the year, you know, that last summer months. And then there was a bit of a bounce back from that in you know, this last quarter. So it'll be the expectation in Q1, Q2, can it maintain the sort of 8 million and then start growing again? We'll have to wait and see.
I mean, the question I have, Rafe, is, you know, we look at where the growth was in Lumia, and it's always been in the low end, and particularly the Lumia 520. And it's at that point I go back and look at the discussions that we had planning Nokia World at the end of October, and the expectation that the 525 might have been announced, and then when it did, it came out 5 weeks later and was only available in Singapore. Nokia went into the Christmas market without a new low-end handset. And I know people say, oh, it's just a little bump in RAM and stuff. It's not that much difference. But in terms of marketing, Apple showed that, you know, it was easier to sell the 5C than it was to sell a one-year-old iPhone 5 on a price discount. Do you think that that sort of, I'm not going to say mismanagement of the portfolio, but not having new things ready to go at Christmas, you know, I mean, let's put it 15/20, you never really hit the shops in any volume, and 13/20 we're still waiting on. Do you think that contributed to these Q4 numbers?
There's always going to be gaps where the sort of portfolio isn't as strong as it is elsewhere, and these, you know, they do go in cycles. And Nokia was strong earlier in the year because it did have that announcement of, you know, well, it was 625, 2720, and then the 925, which I think really helped the third quarter numbers. And maybe that had stepped back a bit in the fourth quarter. But I still think it is disappointing, the 8.2 million number. I don't think there's any way to get away from that. So, yes, you know, there is that mismanagement of the portfolio. I think it's more the way things break down sometimes. I mean, equally, you can turn it around and say, you know, this was the quarter when the new iPhone models came out. There were new low-end Android models coming out as well. So it's never going to be one individual factor. It's, you know, multiple factors combining together.
That is a question that we will be able to address throughout 2014 and potentially onwards beyond that. It would be nice to think it will be in 2015 as well. Or whether we just end up being all about network services. Who knows on that one. Podcasting. We touched on that briefly. And, of course, you're fully aware of what a podcast is if you're listening to this one. Steve, well, let's be fair. You didn't just write 7,500 words over a single weekend. And this is your ongoing quest to find the perfect podcast client for Windows Phone.
Yeah, absolutely. I joked earlier, I was spending 55 hours a day. It kind of felt like that at some point. Realistically, at 15 different podcatching clients, you wouldn't believe there are that many, but there are. Certainly outside America, where they get podcasts more integrated. Windows Phone, for the rest of the world, we have to make do with third-party clients. I've been living with two or three of my favorites day-to-day, listening literally day-to-day, and the other 11 or 12, I gave about an hour each at exploring their functions, writing them up, screenshotting, testing various things out. And I hope I got the flavour right. In one particular case with PCast, right at the end, the 15th of the 15th, apparently I did miss the car mode, so I actually went back and added that as well. So hopefully I've been responding to feedback in the comments and integrating some of the features I might perhaps have missed. You can't catch every single nuance of an application just in an hour or so of usage, but I would say we've got about two or three main contenders. The interesting thing, the really interesting thing, maybe Rafe can comment on this, is that of 15 podcatchers, 15 applications in a very, very competitive part of the Windows Phone ecosystem, none of them, absolutely none of them, I would say, would get more than 80% the way to where they need to be competitive with the likes of Pocket Casts and Dogcatcher on Android, and even the Apple's own podcast program. None of the 15 gets within 80%. And that's tragic. They're all either bugged or flawed. And you know, every case is the developer knows that. The developer knows what's wrong. It's just a question of manpower for them to get the fixes in place, do the testing, to get the applications released. I still think we're a good 2 or 3 months away from having an outright winner, something, an application which is actually perfect, working in an optimized way within Windows Phone 8, and which everyone can be happy with, and I can be happy to recommend. And until that time, I guess it's Podcast Lounge is slightly out in front with Brimcast, Pcast, and Podcast Picker sort of snatching its heels in second place. But they've all got a long way to go. They've all got months of development ahead of them, I would say.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think this does tend to happen in any software development project, partly because, you know, once you get something to a certain standard, there's then always improvements to be made. And it's probably fair to say, Steve, you're one of the more picky customers when it comes to getting your podcast application absolutely right. I use Podcast Lounge and I don't really have any complaints whatsoever. It works fine for me. It does exactly what I want it to do, which is making sure I've got content downloaded in the background. So when I come to listen to it, I've got stuff to listen to, and it makes it easy for me to find podcasts as well. But I do accept there are some people who, you know, as you said, it's that 80% level. There are some ways that Windows Phone works, the API limitations and kind of how mature the platform is, it probably does have an impact here, particularly on some of the background downloading functions and stuff like that. I think you're perhaps a little overcritical, Stu, but I guess it's you're still searching for podcast heaven, into that utopia where you've got the perfect application.
Well, if there was only one or two applications, I could think, okay, well, let's just be glad we've got one. On the Symbian world, we had one, maybe two. I think, okay, I'm just glad I've got an application that basically does what I want. Let's not worry about the fact that it's perfect. Here we've got 15 applications by 15 different developers, most of whom are pretty sophisticated and professional, and I would expect at this point to have something slightly closer to that on other mobile platforms after, what, 2 or 3 years of Windows Phone development. It should be said that I've actually met with a couple of the developers, Richard Castle from Ignis, who produced Podcast Lounge, and he's shown me a beta of their version too, and it really is pretty impressive. And all singing, all dancing, he's rethought the UI and how people access the latest podcasts and new playlists and so forth. I'm sure he won't mind me sharing that. It's really very impressive, but I think he's still, with beta testing, still a couple of months away from that being made public. So, as ever, with everything in the entire Windows Phone world, we have to wait. Patience, the best is round the corner.
Well, I think that's the case for pretty much everything. Just out of curiosity, what is it that is missing in that 20% that would make for the perfect podcast? I mean, is it the same thing in each app or is it different things in each app, Steve?
It's nearly always different in every application. To give you an example, Podcast Lounge, the main thing against it is that you go into your favourites, and there they all are, the podcast artwork with little blue numbers saying how many new ones there are on each feed. There's no ordering whatsoever. You can't tell which is the newest, which is the latest. I want to be able to see a list so I can start from the latest and work my way backwards if I feel the need. So I've always got the latest information, the latest news and so forth. In other applications, typically, it tends to be bugs. It doesn't remember the playback position properly. The screen corrupts. There's always some, in every single case, I found a different flaw, and I listed all of them in the article, so do please go and read that to people listening to this. There was no one program that had a perfect UI, no one program that had a flawless operation, and the further down the functionality tree went, I guess they were slightly more reliable operation, but then the application was doing less. I do want it all. And every time I rewrite and update this article, Rafe, I add another column to my table of my checklist of things that it has to do before I'm prepared to sign it off, and I'm prepared to do that. So every time I update it, I will add another column, another thing I wanted to do, another thing I will not compromise on, and I'm not going to stop doing this until I find an application that ticks all the boxes and is bug-free and is totally reliable. So there.
Yeah. Well, Steve, you are perhaps moving the goalposts, and I should say that Steve is a kind of a past master at finding bugs in apps. If it exists, he'll find it within about 30 seconds of starting an application.
I was about to ask, Steve, is if you got all the developers in a room and mixed up all the code together, are all the elements of the perfect podcast client actually programmed in at least one of the clients? In other words, if you could mash them all together, is there a perfect client, or is there still an issue or a fundamental decision that's not been fixed yet?
Oh, this isn't rocket science, is it? We've had perfectly good podcast clients on Symbian,
I'm not asking that we have them, but do we have all the elements in all the podcasting? Is it a case of now just getting one client that ticks all the correct elements from the existing Windows Phone podcast clients?
Yes, you could probably take. There are two or three applications, I mean, Podcatcher and Podcast Picker in particular. They have such clean, intuitive UIs. They don't try and add 1,000 different functions. They basically do the basics. They do it very well, very intuitively. They're just not bug-free yet. And I guess if I was to really get all those developers in one room, I'd say, look, let's take one of these apps. Let's apply our combined resources and get it 100.0% bug-free and call it a day and all go down the pub. Having said
100.0% bug-free.
Yeah. Well, with 15 developers of that caliber.
You're not even going to. I mean, I'll be happy with the 2 Sigma bug free, to be perfectly honest, but. Whoa! That's how demanding Steve is, developers. Be glad when I review your applications.
Of course, part of the problem here is that everyone's idea of the perfect app, whichever genre or type it happens to be, is different. And actually, I think part of the issue here is developers have made conscious decisions to design things in a certain way or do things in a certain way. Bug fixing is something else. And I think Podcast Lounge is a good example of this, where, you know, the discovery and play podcast is designed to be a certain way and it may not fit in with, you know, people's expectations. And certainly for me, I don't care about when they were released. As Steve was talking about, they're kind of ordered by time. I'm more interested, I want to listen to a specific podcast and I'll just want to pick up whatever the latest one is there, and I'd like it sitting there ready to go. So there is an element of that in all of this. The other thing, Steve, that I know you've been trying out is the Lumia 1520. This is kind of also known as the big screen Windows Phone device. So what's been your, you know, kind of overriding impression or your view on it? We'll get you to talk about the camera in just a little bit, but does a device that big work?
It depends what you mean by work. I mean, technically, I've just been writing my the script for my phone show review, so this is all fairly fresh in my mind. I mean, technically, it is a wonderful, superb, fantastic slice of silicon. I mean, it's a glorious piece of technology. You pick it up in your hands, you rotate your hands around it, you think, wow, this is just fabulous hardware, fabulous software inside on the whole, and it's wonderful specifications, wonderful components, speaker, camera, screen, clarity is gorgeous. And you think, well, you know, where can it go from here? But the thing is, it's because they've gone for this phablet form factor, they put their absolute flagship specifications in something that's actually probably too large for 95% of the people. I know that the phablet thing is in, and I've been using a Galaxy Note 2 and just about getting away with it. But this thing is huge. The 1520 dwarfs my Galaxy Note 2. And everyone I've handed this 1520 to has said, I basically handed it back within 15 seconds saying, I cannot use that. And they used to kind of say that about some of the previous 5-inch screen phones, but this time they really do mean it. And the human hand isn't getting any bigger. So there's my worries about the form factor, about whether there really is a demand for something this size on a large scale. And my second worry, Rafe, is that the fact that having been playing with it now for about a week and trying to use it, it's very, very evident that it is basically a big phone. And yes, Windows Phone 8 works very smoothly, and certainly on this chipset and processor, it works incredibly fast. But they really could have done more to optimize some of the applications to use that big screen and the higher resolution. I just feel that corners have been cut and they haven't put enough time and effort. For example, some applications, turning the phone into landscape, I would have expected a kind of split screen view, like in an email client where you'd have a list of emails and on the right-hand side you'd have a pane with the contents of the email. That sort of really obvious thing you do with a larger screen device. They just haven't done that. And the software is great, it's fast, it's fluid, but it feels a bit unfinished. And the hardware is just a tiny bit too out there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. It was kind of very similar to the impression I got. I think the question around the software is a really interesting one, because there's very clearly, you know, two markets, you know, use the bigger screen and do stuff with it, or just have everything kind of blown up bigger in size as if it's been put in a photocopy and the 200% button press. And talking to people, it's quite clear that some people do just want the bigger phone without the optimizations. And so it's a tricky challenge. And talking to some of the manufacturers, and I've talked to Nog about this, to HTC and Samsung, and they've all sort of said, actually, the research we get back from users say most people just want a bigger phone, and they talk about, you know, the grey market, and they talk about different segments. I mean, the other thing I'm curious, I was really skeptical about the 1520 and that size at all, and you know, no way, not at all. But I did come away thinking, yes, I can see how people, you know, would want to use that. It kind of grew on me. I was wondering if something similar happened for you, you know, because I think you were a skeptic about big phones like that. You're saying not for you, but do you think it makes sense for some people?
Absolutely. These things are finding a niche. The market sales have proved that. I mean, the Galaxy Notes have done wonderfully well across the world, and this is obviously Nokia taking a stab at the same market. And let's face it, an awful lot of people on their smartphones these days, they do consume media. I mean, I've watched my daughter using a 3.5-inch screen iPhone, for goodness sake, and 90% of the stuff she does on it is consuming videos, Netflix and YouTube and so forth. And BBC iPlayer. And let's be honest, if you've got a larger screen, you can do all that stuff much better. And as people's need for a smartphone changes over the years, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, people were using a smartphone as a literally converged phone, and they were doing all sorts of advanced, geeky stuff on it. These days, a lot of that stuff is just taken for granted, and people have moved on and say, right, I now want it to be my television, I now want it to be my tablet, and so forth. And so there is a need for these larger screens, and there is a market. Skeptical is at which point that mass market appeal starts to become really quite niche appeal, and I worry that Nokia have gone too far with the 6-inch with the fairly large bezels. I think they have gone a fraction too far, but the market will prove me right or wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder the same whether a 5.5-inch phone might have done better. I mean, I know you've been comparing it to the Samsung Galaxy Note 3, leaving aside the software issue. Well, maybe comment on software afterwards. I mean, which would you say has the better hardware and the sort of the design, you know, that first glance impression?
Oh, absolutely, no question. The Lumia 1520 is drop dead gorgeous, and apart from that, my usual worries about, you know, sealed battery, and that is a minor point these days. And I've written editorial on that. Apart from that, there's just no faulting Nokia's hardware prowess. And you just pick up 1520, you literally want to keep fondling it in your hand. You pick up a Samsung Galaxy, and you literally want to put it straight back down on the desk again.
Oh, meow! Oh.
The thing that came for me from the 1520 was how much I was looking forward to having that specification, that kind of technology in a smaller device, you know, the 930 or whatever it's going to be, you know, with that kind of updated camera module, particularly the screen technology, but also that feel in the hand.
Yes, obviously, I'm going to bring in the camera at this point, and that may be a good segue for you, Rafe. But something like the 1020, but with the same camera, the 1520's chipset, and a slightly larger screen, I think we could have the best of all worlds, yeah.
Before we get on to the 1520, Euron, I know you've been using the Xperia, which I believe is an even bigger screen.
Yes, like
and, you know, also, probably, yeah. It's when does it get into the tablet device? And you've used 7-inch tablets as well as the 10-inch tablets, and there is a crossover there.
There is, yeah, but what I'm finding, and I should be personal here, is I hate that middle ground. I mean, I can use these devices, they're great, but the two devices that have gotten me excited recently, what I've been doing and trialing it, all tech stuff, is first of all, the Surface Pro 2, which Microsoft had given me a demo unit of. This is where it's a tweener, it's between laptop and tablet. It's basically the old compact TC1000, but with a modern operating system on it. And it does the split screen that Steve was talking about there on the 1520, and when you have the Metro interface, it still seems to be called Metro on the Surface as well. It's actually a very good tablet. It weighs twice as much as an iPad Air, but it does twice as much stuff, especially when you're using things like audio editing software and Windows Live Writer. But the one that's been enjoying me, and I've got to be fair, I've only had it in my hand for 36 hours, is Sony's Xperia Z1 Compact, which was announced at CES 2 weeks ago. Essentially, it's the 5-inch Sony Xperia Z range, but in a 4.3-inch screen device. Now, they're calling it compact. I'm like, 4.3 is not compact. 3.5 is compact. 4.3 is slightly big, but it is a small handset with the same power as the bigger ones. And I much prefer carrying a big and a small rather than try and find a tweener device. Now, that might partly be because I've not got a hold of the Review 1520, because Steve managed to pry it out of Rafe's hands, and now Rafe is trying to pry it back out of Steve's hands. So I'm just going to sit here and go, yeah, all right, guys, I'm fine. But, you know, even when you said something like the Lumia 625, it felt a little bit too big for me. But again, it's personal. I know there's a market out there for these phablets. Like, Steve, I hate the name phablet. Really, you make it sound like a prefab from the 1950s. It's just, I love the fact that we now have form factors for everybody, and we have price points that go on the same skies. I just wish that we could have price points where you have powerful small handsets, powerful big handsets, and cheap big handsets and cheap small handsets, rather than the moment where it seems to be a linear of small is cheap and big is large. I don't want a line, I want a cloud of that there. And I think also that's one thing that Windows Phone could look to. It kind of has that sort of line of cheap is small and big is powerful. I want to see that tilted and brought round again. I'd love to see something like the 525, given the specs, you know, okay, not the camera ones, because Steve will start going on about physics and stuff in his 55-hour day. But I'd just love to have a small handset with oomph.
Yeah, it's interesting because that's something we hear a lot in the comments and the mail we receive. And just kind of seeing the early signs of that with the 625 and the 1320 kind of being cheap but big, we haven't really got the kind of small but high end yet, and be interesting to see whether that changes. And what you were saying there about carrying a big and a small device, certainly something I understand. You know, it's why I kind of prefer the 925 or the 1020 scale of device and then carry a tablet or a laptop with that. But for those that just want a single device, you know, maybe the phone is the only smart device they have, or maybe have a desktop computer or a full-size laptop. It's interesting. I think it's a valid argument. And so there isn't a wrong or a right about this. What I do want to ask Steve about is the camera, though, because we've had a lot of questions about this on the 1520. When I was using it, I felt I was pleasantly surprised because I was a bit skeptical about, you know, bringing what was effectively the 1020 technology with the oversampling into a camera module that was a bit like what you have in the 925, and it's kind of marrying the two together. I felt they actually did a pretty good job, but I know people want to hear Steve's view on this, and also get you to talk a little bit about OIS in the video mode, which is, I think, an interesting thing that people may not have picked up on, Steve.
Yeah, let's start with that last bit first, the OIS. The 1520 uses this kind of scaled-down camera from the 1020, but it's also scaled up from things like the 925 and 920, in a sense, in terms of the optical image stabilization. Now, the smallest camera phones have this MEMS actuator. This is a responsive system which does this hardware optical image stabilization. And when they said the 1020 has got it as well, I thought, how on earth did they manage that with this huge monster camera? And they said ball bearings. Ball bearings is the answer. They showed them how it worked, and I was a bit skeptical. Yes, OIS kind of works in the 1020, but it's clearly not as responsive as that in the likes of the 920, the 925, and now the 1520. And I did my video head-to-head comparison the other day up on the site between the 1020 and the 1520, and you can see for yourself the 1520 is much smoother. So I do have high hopes that we've got, you know, a combination of the PureView oversampling and the PureView zoom from the higher spec camera devices, but with the really responsive OIS, making the 1520 potentially a very, very good video capture device. Of course, add in the fact that it's got a really clear screen outdoors. However, there's the big caveat that it is on very early software. We say this with every single Nokia Lumia, in fact, every single Nokia device, full stop, that its first firmware has almost always got some restrictions and some bugs. And the initial photographs and initial video from 1520 all appears to have slightly too much contrast, perhaps a bit of a purple tint, perhaps a bit too sharp. I'm sure they're going to fix that. There's no point in pulling out too much in terms of absolute verdicts at this stage. There will be firmware updates to the 1520, and they will improve both the stills and the video. I have to say, just judging on the quality of the hardware itself, and the size of the module, you've been hinting, Rafe, that they can perhaps transplant this 1520 chipset and camera module into, you know, lower priced devices and smaller devices through the rest of the year. I think that might be quite exciting. If the 1520's camera with fixed software becomes the standard, you know, camera component for Nokia Microsoft smartphones in 2014, then that's a pretty solid line of devices.
It is, and I'm very confident that will happen. We've kind of already seen the hints of this in the Verizon kind of specific Lumia icon, and I'm sure there'll be, as I say, a 920 or 930, whatever it ends up being called, with this camera module in it. And like you say, some updates will undoubtedly improve things. I think when you're talking about kind of the base performance of this, it's pretty similar to what you're getting in, you know, the 925 as it is now after the Lumia Black update. But with those software updates, I'm pretty confident that the 1520 module will improve significantly, and so by the time kind of the next set of devices come out with, you know, using that module, it will improve. And, you know, so it's always, where does it sit in things? It's not as good as the 1020, I'm sure, and I'm sure Steve would agree with that, but I do think it is already a slight cut above the rest, and I think that advantage is going to increase. And so this will be, you know, the new, you know, camera module for everybody to kind of aim at. And I'm talking about obviously Nokia, but also its competitors as well. This will become kind of the new standard for, you know, non-imaging flagship devices. I mean, do you think that's fair, Steve? Is this, you know, something quite exciting, really, in terms of development of camera phones?
Oh, I wouldn't say exciting. No, exciting is the cutting edge stuff, like the 1020, like the 808, like the N82, all the classic flagship camera phones from Nokia. It's not exciting in that sense. It's probably exciting in an industry-wide, raising the bar across the platforms in a sense, but that doesn't really get me off, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll put it this way. Having that oversampling technology in a standard phone, or I should say one that's not imaging, I do think that's interesting, because that's what is, to me, feels like it's increasing the quality, and it's kind of comes back to some of this, you know, computational photography. Lots of potential there, and you kind of wonder what Nokia will do with it next. And it's the reframing and all of that kind of thing, and obviously you do get that in Nokia camera and some of the other devices, but obviously reframing works, it's kind of, it's intended to, with that extra, you know, megapixels available. So I mean, I was impressed by the 1520 camera far more than I thought I would be. So I guess bottom line, Steve, is it a good camera in there, leaving aside your love for the 1020?
It's got definite potential. I'm very much aware, look, that it's not just Nokia doing this, of course. If, say, Nokia then produces this 20 megapixel sensor and the PureView technology and the oversampling and so forth and the zooming across their range of devices, or what Microsoft devices as they'll become called. We've got Sony doing the same thing. We've got rumours of Samsung producing 20 megapixel sensors as standard. We've got rumours of Apple all producing higher megapixel sensors and presumably doing similar things. They've all seen what Nokia is doing by allowing a degree of lossless zoom. They've all seen a bit of oversampling, and Apple have been doing a bit of oversampling and low light for a couple of years now. So this is a very common trend. I think Nokia are obviously at the cutting edge of this, but I think we'll see a lot more of it in 2014. And I think, yes, it will improve the user's life. They'll be able to zoom in. They get higher quality and low light. The benefits are all round, I think.
Okay, so I think that probably sums up our camera discussion for this week, and indeed our 1520 discussion. We'll no doubt revisit it when we've had a chance to look at the 1320, and maybe in the context of some new devices to come, and no doubt that camera module will come up again. Ewan, I guess it's sort of time for us to wrap up, because we're going to be longer than usual this week, so maybe we'll skip the apps for this week, but we'll revisit that next week along with some other rants and discussion topics to keep things going ahead of MWC.
Indeed, we have kept it rather on course of two topics. There is always your comments are welcome back on the website. And we're going to wrap it up with a W, not with a rap, so you can all relax. This is not a podcast where there will be singing. Rafe, I understand that 361 is doing a musical episode next month.
Well, I think perhaps Ewan would like to do that, the other Ewan. But Ben and I are more opposed to singing in podcasts. It doesn't seem to work very well.
There we go. And that's why I do a Eurovision podcast. So there we go. Just any good in the 361. Right. Rafe, we've mentioned one for you. We've mentioned one for me. Steve, we've got the phone show as well that carries on. Any singing in?
There can be. I can do a lot of singing and link through to my different sites. Sorry about that.
Oh, my ears.
Yeah, there we go. That's why Steve never got to sing for Hawkwind. He was just better at it than the rest of the band. There we go. That's your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. Half the listeners we haven't mentioned Hawkwind for at least 9 months, have we, Steve? Send somebody away to Wikipedia, if nothing else. Everybody else, pop onto the website. We will have more chat and discussion next week on the podcast, carrying on with the editorials, flows, links, and reviews on the website. And of course, we are warming up. MWC is getting ready. Steve and I will be working out just where Rafe is going to try and plan on staying. This time, Rafe is going to be wondering just how slow the Wi-Fi will be in the venue. All that coming up and more through the end of January, February, and the rest of the year. For now, thanks to Steve.
Bye for now.
Thanks to Rafe.
Thanks everyone for listening.
And thank you for stealing my last line. I'm kind of lost now. Bye-bye.